Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. Today is Sunday, November 30th, 2008. This is podcast number 50, and the title is In Defense of the Goons. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. The goon phenomenon has been with us since the beginning of the safe withdrawal rate debate, the great safe withdrawal rate debate on May 13th, 2002. All of the investing information that we've developed at PassionSaving.com and at the various discussion boards in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities was developed during the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate that's been going on for 6.5 years now. And the goons have been with us since the first days. The goons are, they could be looked at as the irritant that has helped develop the oyster, the great pearl, the irritant in the oyster that has developed the great pearl of rational investing. So I'll just give a brief description of the goon phenomenon and then go into the main course of this particular podcast, which is to put forward some words in defense of the goons. Obviously, the word goons is not meant to be a characterization of praise, but there are some, there's always two sides to a story, and there are good things that can be said on behalf of the goons. And so I think it's emotionally healthy for us to have at least one podcast here at the site that makes that case. Okay. So what is a goon? What is a goon in the investing realm? The story is that when I was putting together my retire early plan back in the mid-1990s, I looked at some research that goes by the name of safe withdrawal rate research. And it's research that people use to plan their retirements. And they try to determine how much they can take out of what percentage of their portfolio they can take out each year and be virtually certain that their retirement will survive 30 years. That's the safe withdrawal rate. And these studies are used in just about all retirement planning advice that you see today. They are used in articles in the newspaper and on websites and so forth. I discovered that the studies are analytically invalid, and thus I did not use the numbers in the conventional safe withdrawal rate studies in planning my own retirement. I brought what I had learned to the Motley Fool discussion board back in May of 2002, and all heck was released as a result. We've had tremendous discussions at more than half a dozen different discussion board communities in the 6.5 years since. And the insights that we developed are the basis for all of these podcasts and all of the investing articles at the website and all the research at John Walter Russell's website, which is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. And all the material that we use as the engine for the calculators at both John's website and at my website. So we've mined some real gold during the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. I view these discussions as the most important discussions ever held on the internet. I'm biased, to be sure, but that is my belief, that these discussions are the most important discussions that have been held on the internet during its brief lifespan. At the same time, the great debate has had a very dark side. We've seen massive amounts of abusive posting and highly vicious, nasty abusive posting, including death threats, board bannings, smear campaigns, all sorts of ugliness. And that really started on the very first day if you go back to the Motley Fool board, and it was the Retire Early homepage board at Motley Fool, and you look at the first post that I put up on May 13th, 2002, and then look at the entire thread, look at the comments that were filed in response, you will see abusive posting. Certainly not as bad as it grew to be in later months, but you will see abusive posting, and you will continue to see abusive posting today. If you look at boards where these issues are discussed today, you will see abusive posting to this day. So abusive posting has been with us from the beginning and continues. And I came to refer to those who engaged in abusive posting. They engage in this posting, obviously, for the purpose of shutting down the discussions. The better the discussions get, the more insights we generate, the more determined the abusive posters are to shut those discussions down. And I came to refer to these posters as goons just because I needed a term to use to refer to them. And but the goon phenomenon is not just of interest to those who want to see the Internet Discussion Board communications medium achieve its potential, which is something I would very much like to see. So for that reason, I would like to see something done about the goon phenomenon. I would like to see the owners of the websites where discussion forums are held to take more serious action to rein in goonish posting practices. But aside from that issue, the goon phenomenon tells us something important about how to invest successfully for the long term. Because all communities, not just the Retire Early community and the indexing discussion board community, all communities have goons. I remember a email I received not too long ago. It was maybe 2-3 months ago, from a woman who had read some of the articles at the site and was very excited. And she thanked me. She wanted to thank me for, you know, the help I had given her on investing questions. And actually, it was more than 3 months ago, because I know that I received that email before the big price crash. So this woman was actually spared the price crash. And that letter, that email is set forth, the text of it is set forth if you go to the Middle Class Millionaires section of the site. Go down the left side of any page at the website, and there are buttons there for the different sections of the site, and click on Middle Class Millionaires. And I think it might be on page 3 of that site. I'm not sure, but I believe it's page 3. And I can't recall the woman's name, but I give her first name only. But you can read her story. And she talks about how she was beginning to have doubts about the conventional investing wisdom. And she was sort of thinking of lowering her stock allocation. But she makes the incredible statement, but I know it's true. I know she's not telling tales. The incredible statement that she couldn't discuss these issues among her friends because their reactions would be so strong. And I've experienced this myself. And this is why she was so excited to find the PassionSaving.com site, where she could find articles this was before the podcast were coming out, where she could find articles where people talked about these issues, talked about the dangers of investing in stocks at times when prices are at insanely dangerous levels. So she was a victim of the goon phenomenon. She never posted on an internet discussion board, you know, up at that time. But she was subject to the goon phenomenon. I was subject to there are some incredible stories outside of discussion boards where I've been subjected to the goon phenomenon. The most incredible, this one just blows my mind. There are a lot of things in the great debate that blow my mind, but this one, it's going to take me a long time to get over. But I was looking one time, and I don't know how long ago this was. Time passes quickly when you're having fun. How long ago? Oh, if I had a guess, I would say maybe it was last spring, maybe early last spring. I was looking to do some publicity for the calculators that we've, you know, that are available at the site. The stock return predictor and the retirement risk evaluator. I think my focus was the retirement risk evaluator. And I called a couple people in the, you know, that do publicity work, you know, and talk to them. And I spoke to this woman, and you know, I'm basically offering to give her money. In other words, the relationship I was trying to set up is a relationship where I would be paying her significant sums of money, you know, to help me get publicity, get articles into magazines and newspapers and this sort of thing. And, you know, of course, when we started the discussion, she was sort of flattering me. You know, she's saying, oh, you know, the first thing she did, she had an assistant come on or something, and they, you know, to find something out about me, and they said, oh, what's your website, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. She had taken a look at this before she returned the call, and she says, oh, Rob, you know, this website's so great, and calculator so wonderful, and, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, sort of, you know, thank you, whatever, you know, but I'm sort of trying to tune it out because it's flattery. And, but that's fine. I mean, that's par for the course. I mean, there's nothing unusual about that. But then I started to describe the background, the story that I want to have told. And, of course, part of the story is the old school safe withdrawal rate studies get the numbers wrong, and that means that our retirement planning advice that we've been relying on for 20 or 30 years is wrong, and it means that in the event stocks perform in the future, anything at all, as they've always performed in the past, millions of people are going to suffer busted retirements, one of the worst life setbacks imaginable. So there's a story there, okay? And but part of the story is the fact that, you know, during these discussions, we have contacted some of the big name experts in the field. And in general, we've received some, I don't want to say we've received no positive response. We've received helpful responses from a number of experts. You know, Bill Bernstein had some wonderful things to say in his book about safe withdrawal rates. Scott Burns sent some great emails to me. Michael Kitsis sent some wonderful emails. Recently I had an email response from Bill Bangan, financial planner out in California, who's done some of the old school safe withdrawal rate research. Ed Easterling participated in discussions back at the Fire Board. So we have had positive feedback, but we've also had a lot of strange feedback. And even some negative feedback, not only from goon posters, but even from experts in the field. Scott Burns is a case of that. He made some wonderful comments, and Scott wrote three separate columns referring to the work that John Russell and I have done in this field. And of course, I'm grateful for that, and I think that was a kind thing to do. And you know, I'm grateful that Scott participated in the exchange of some emails. Made some good points on both sides, I like to think. You know, at one point, Scott was getting a little hot under the collar when we were having these discussions. At one point, he said, Rob, you've added a new layer of understanding to the safe withdrawal rate issue, but your approach of letting people know, of saying that the old school studies are analytically invalid, that they get the numbers wrong, he said that approach is catastrophically unproductive, that sort of thing. So while there has been some good response, there has also been certainly a reluctance to getting the old school studies corrected. That's the understatement of the year, and very little interest, virtually none, in publicizing the errors of the old school studies and in warning people who made use of those studies that they're likely going to suffer busted retirements if they don't make changes in their retirement plans. And it would seem to me that when we, you know, once we discovered that the studies were analytically invalid, the obvious step to take was to notify people who had been taken in by the false claims. I've always argued that when Bill Bernstein published his book, as part of the publicity for that book, he should have gotten tried to get an article on the front page of the Wall Street Journal or the front page of the New York Times. And I don't see why such an article shouldn't be run. It's obviously news that there are millions of people who are going to suffer busted retirements if we don't make them aware of these errors. So that's a form of goonishness. They're not, these people are not, the experts have certainly not engaged in the sort of behavior that we've seen from the internet goons. They have not put forward death threats or anything like this. But you know, that's a low level form of goonishness. And my take is that we all, I think of goonishness in ways comparable to how I think of sin in the non-investing realm. I think of goonishness as behavior that, self-destructive behavior that is destructive of ourselves, of our own better nature, and of others. I think of sin that way, that sin hurts other people. It also hurts ourselves. I think that's true in all cases of sin, and I think it's true of all, in all cases of goonishness. And so even low-level goonishness does hurt the person engaging in it. It makes it harder for that person to understand the realities of stock investing. So one of the things that the book that I am writing on investing is called Investing for Humans. And the theme, the dominant theme, is that what we need to do is take all the forms of learning that we make use of in the non-investing realm and make them applicable to investing. So, for example, you know, we use our human reason in areas other than investing. I'm saying that we should use our human reason in the area of investing as well, rather than being taken in by intensely emotional approaches to investing, like the passive investing model, which I view as a 100% emotional approach. And I argue that we should be compassionate. We should be compassionate of other, you know, of our fellow community members, our fellow humans. So we should care about them as well as about ourselves. We certainly should care about our own financial futures as well, and therefore work in communities to improve our understanding of investing, rather than trying to cover up errors and rather than trying to form enemy camps, you know, where what you see in investing often is, you know, people that follow Bogle, they can't listen to people that follow Shiller, and people who follow Shiller can't listen to people that follow Buffett, and people that follow Buffett can't listen to people who, you know, follow Jim Cramer, whatever it is. And I argue that no, we should work together. We should point out the errors of those who have made mistakes, and at the same time, show gratitude for the insights that are developed in these different camps. I don't see them as enemy camps. I see them as different communities all striving toward the same goal of learning how to invest effectively for the long term. So the goal with rational investing, which is the model that I advocate, the alternative to the failed passive investing model, I believe rational investing is the investing model of the future. The core to this is the idea of being fully human during the investing project, when participating in the investing project, and avoiding goonishness. And one of the ways we do that, we don't do it, of course, by condemning the goons. I mean, we condemn certain behavior. I certainly condemn abusive posting. I condemn, you know, posting practices that are aimed at doing harm to discussion board communities. I certainly condemn those particular acts. But I think it's a mistake to condemn the people engaging in those acts, at least in a complete way. I think what we should do is try to understand those people. What makes them tick? What makes them goons? And part of that is understanding that there are good things that can be said about the goons. Instead of taking an attitude of, oh, you know, the goons are all these bad people, and us rational investors, we're the good people, and we, you know, none of us will ever associate with them. None of us will ever talk to them. Try to understand them. Try to understand what makes them tick. And what brought this podcast on is it's you know, this is the Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend, and I visited my mother for Thanksgiving, my wife and I and our two boys, and also at the house, my older brother was there, and his boy was there, who is now grown, he's practicing law. And the woman that he's living with, and her child was from a marriage that is now ended. So I think there were nine of us. I believe there were 9 of us altogether. And we, you know, I had a discussion during dinner Thursday. We went out to a restaurant, and my older brother, I have not discussed these investing issues with in the past. My younger brother, I communicate with him more frequently. He lives closer. But so I start discussing these investing issues. Now, my brother did not, you know, I would not say his response was a goonish response. He was not hostile. He was not openly hostile. But he was skeptical. He was certainly skeptical. And every time, you know, it was sort of a, I don't know, the conversation went on probably for 15, 20 minutes. It never quite reached the argument stage, but he was reluctant to buy into what I was saying. I don't think there's any other way to put it. And I always marvel at this. And of course, one of the problems I have as the person who has put forward these ideas and studied them on a daily basis now for 6.5 years is that the ideas are they're second nature to me now. It's very hard for me to imagine how these ideas sound to newcomers after studying them in such depth. And so I just try to state the ideas. I try to state them clearly, and I try to start at the beginning and describe the basics. But I often get the feeling that people hear something other than what I'm saying. Often I get that feeling. And that's what leads to goonishness. I'm not saying that everyone who hears this responds in a goonish way. Certainly that's not the case. But what we get with the goons are basically outlier personalities. They're people who are intense believers in passive investing, and therefore they simply, it's not just that they are skeptical of claims that passive investing has failed. They simply can't tolerate such claims. They freak out. But the reason that those people are able to gain influence in our communities is that there's a much larger group who are not really properly characterized as goons, but who are somewhat sympathetic to the goon position. They may not like the death threats. They may not like the deception post or the intimidation post, things like that nature. But they also are skeptical of rational investing. They're skeptical of valuation-informed indexing. They're skeptical of the idea that long-term timing works. They're skeptical of the idea that it's possible to predict stock returns that are going to, you know, take place 10 years out. They're skeptical of these ideas. And, of course, in order to make the transition to the more effective investing model, we need to overcome the skepticism. And I think part of what we need to do to do that is to understand where these people are coming from to the extent we can. So the purpose of this podcast is to explore that. Where are the goons coming from? And I felt that it would be helpful to write down some points that I can say in defense of the goons. And I scribbled down here 22 points. So hopefully I'll be able to run through these fairly quickly and keep this all on one podcast. Number one, in defense of the goons, and this is the most important one, and I wrote an entire article on this point. The point is the goons practice what they preach. And I have an article in the Banned at Motley Fool section of the website. You can read the article. And it's called, I don't recall the precise title, but it's called something along the lines of, Does John Graney believe his own safe withdrawal rate claims? And the point here is John Graney is sort of the leader of the goons in the retire early community, and he has a website where he has a discussion board where goons meet and plan strategies for destroying discussion boards or blogs that permit honest posting on safe withdrawal rates. And you know, John's a friend of mine from back in the Motley Fool days, and John has a safe withdrawal rate study at his website. His website is retireearlyhomepage.com. That's an old school safe withdrawal rate study. But you know, I was trying to get inside John's head. Why, you know, John has basically decided to make it his life's work to smear anyone who says anything positive about new school safe withdrawal rate research. How could someone get it into their head that that's a positive thing to do? with their whatever life energy they have remaining to them. One thing I have always been able to say in John's behalf is that I, of course, deplore the behavior. That's that. I hope that that is understood, and I hope I don't need to say it. It, you know, should go without speaking. But while the behavior is deplorable, there is a lot of evidence that John believes that he believes that the safe withdrawal rate really is always 4%. Now, he knows that he cannot defend this in civil and reasoned discussion. That's why he's a goon. That's why he engages in abusive posting practices. He knows that it can't be defended rationally. That's as clear can be. Or you wouldn't see the behavior you see. But, all the same, John has said on discussion boards that he has a 90% stock allocation. And this is after he participated in the great debate, after he heard about what the historical data really says about long-term safe withdrawal rates and about the effective valuation on long-term returns. Now, I cannot make any sense out of these two positions, that on the one hand, he knows that the old school studies cannot be defended in reasonable debate, and yet he follows them in his own investing decisions. There is no way to square those two realities, yet I have participated on a daily basis for 6.5 years, and I am here to tell you I believe that he believes both things. And if it were only one person, I wouldn't make much of it. I would just say this is a quirky outlier personality. Can't make any sense out of it, but so what? But it's not just John. There are hundreds who I have seen on discussion boards who believe both things. They are absolutely convinced that there is no possible means of making a civil and reasoned defense of the old school studies or passive investing in general. But yet they follow the conventional investing advice in their own lives. Make of it what you will. That's what my eyes tell me. And, you know, please, if you have any doubts, check the post archives of our discussions. And if you can make a case that I'm wrong, I'd love to hear it. But I think it counts in defense of the goons that they do practice what they preach, that they do personally, that they use abusive tactics to stop others from hearing about these ideas, but they personally continue to believe in them, despite the mountain of evidence showing that these ideas do not stand up to scrutiny. Point number two in defense of the goons, they are smart. I won't go on and on about it, but many of these people are people who I know from earlier times, from pre-goon days, pre-great safe withdrawal rate debate days, and they're smart people. These are effective savers. They've saved large sums of money. John has developed a calculator a safe withdrawal rate study at his site that obviously takes intelligence. Mel Lindauer has written a book. Mel Lindauer was the lead goon over at the Vanguard Diehards board and now at the Bogleheads.org board. Mel has written a book. He's the co-author of The Boglehead's Guide to Investing. And there are many people who have posted in defense of both John and Mel, who are, no dummies by any stretch of the imagination. And obviously, when you get to the expert level, where, as I say, it's not fair to refer to the experts who have defended the old school studies as goons, but it is fair to say that goonish thinking has influenced them. And they're obviously smart as smart can be. People like Bill Bernstein, Jonathan Clements, John Bogle, Michael Kitsis, and on and on. Bill Bangin, these people are smart as smart can be. And yet they have defended the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, and they have defended them even after they've become aware of the weaknesses in the intellectual framework that supports these studies. So the problem is not a lack of intelligence. Goonishness is not dumbness. They are not at all the same concept, not even close. If anything, I sometimes think intelligence is correlated with goonishness, because the more people have bought into the conventional investing advice, the more likely it is that they are going to fall victim to goonishness. And what really happens in a lot of these cases is we use our intelligence not to learn things, but to rationalize. That's been my experience. So if anything, I tend to think that intelligence is correlated with goonishness rather than being a contrary indicator. But it is certainly not the case that goons are dumb. I see no evidence of that. Point number three, in defense of the goons, they are not doing it for money. There have been some cases, especially with John Graney and a little bit with Mel Lindauer, where community members who were repulsed by the intimidation tactics that were employed to shut down discussions would make claims that the goon posters were doing it for money. They would say, oh, you know, John's just trying to promote his safe withdrawal rate study. He's expecting to make money out of this. Or Mel's trying to sell his book. I see virtually no evidence that that's so. John Graney charges $5 for his safe withdrawal rate study at his website. The study is well worth $5. He's not trying to cheat anybody. You know, the study is a significant piece of work. It gets the numbers wrong. It uses a methodology that's analytically invalid. It's dangerous. It's a dangerous study. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't pay $5 and learn from that study. I recommend you do that. And I gave the study a 5-star review when I reviewed it for Soapbox.com. So it's a serious piece of work. And, you know, he's not making money selling that study for $5. He's making very little. And of course, he has a shortened version of the study that is available at his website for free. So he's obviously not in this to make a killing financially. And the same thing's true with Mel Lindauer. Mel Lindauer does make money from his book. But, you know, there are things that Mel Lindauer could do with his time where he would make more money than the money he's made selling that book. I am confident. He wrote that book out of love. He wrote that book after building that discussion board, the Vanguard Diehards board this is, into what the most successful investing board on planet Earth. And, you know, I don't know, he's contributed. I think the number, when I was there, he had contributed 20,000, 30,000 posts, and it's a larger number today, so let's say it's 30,000. You don't contribute 30,000 posts to a discussion board because you're out for the big bucks. I mean, come on. So Mel has made a small amount of money, but he could have been making a lot more money engaging in other activities. So that's not the motivation. That's not the problem. There's, you know, this claim about the money is a little more serious when you talk about somebody like Larry Swedrow or Rick Ferry. They contribute at the, you know, used to be at Vanguard Diehards, now at bogleheads.org. I think they are trying, they have books as well, and they also have financial planning practices. And I personally believe that part of their motivation in participating at these boards is to promote the services they provide. And so in that case, it may be that they make some money out of this, but, you know, they're not doing it for the money either. And even to the extent they are, they are helping these board communities by participating. So I think it's a wonderful arrangement that, in other words, they have services to sell. People get to see how they respond to questions, and then people get to make a decision as to whether to hire them or not. Well, what could be better? What could be more fair and appropriate for both sides than to test out a financial plan or on a discussion board and then make a decision whether that person is for you? So, you know, the idea that I do think that Rick Ferry and Larry Swedrow and others should be speaking out against the goonish practices. On that, I find fault with them. I will not participate in a board that does not permit people to post their sincere views. I have said I post honestly or I post not when it comes to these boards. And I contributed not 20,000 posts like Mel, but I had several thousand posts at Vanguard Diehards. And I had several thousand at Early Retirement Forum and at Motley Fool and at nofeeboards.com. So I've contributed many, many, many thousands of posts. But I always drew a line in the sand at the point of honest posting, and I said, I will post honestly or I will post not. And contacted the site administrators when abusive posters got out of hand and asked that action be taken and asked that my fellow community members speak up. And I believe that Larry Swedro should do the same. I believe that Rick Ferry should do the same. I believe Bill Bernstein should do the same. I believe John Bogle should do the same. I believe Mel Lindauer should do the same, and John Graney, everyone. But so on that, I will find fault with some of these people, but I will not find fault with them on the grounds that they're somehow trying to trick people into hiring them or some such thing. They are they're using these boards. Some of them are using them for promotional purposes, but that's great as far as I'm concerned. I think that's great. I think they should use it for those purposes, and it's great for on both sides of the transaction. Another thing I find fault with is that sometimes people like Mel Lindauer and his supporters will say, Rob Bennett's using it to promote his book, and that was foolishness. I have I don't even have a book on investing. I have a book on saving that I sell at my website, but it's hard for me to imagine how me posting on the flaws in the safe withdrawal rate studies and getting my head slammed against the wall for doing so is going to help me sell copies of Passion Saving. That's 100% nutso. So those are false claims, and again, inappropriate. That's truly goonish behavior. But I don't think it's true the other way. I don't think it's true the other way that any of the people either engaging in goonish posting or tolerating it were doing so with financial considerations in mind. That I have a hard time buying. I don't see a direct financial consideration. I think there are some financial considerations lurking in the background. In other words, financial planners, I think, have pressures on them not to tell the full true story about how stock investing works. On that, I think financial pressures do come into play. But that's not quite what I'm talking about here when I say that some of the goons have been accused of doing it for the money, and I don't think that's a fair claim. Point number four in defense of the goons. Most experts don't say they are wrong. So when somebody like, John Graney has made this point on numerous occasions. He says the old school studies are peer reviewed. And that's true. And peer review should mean something. And I think it's the strongest argument he has for his case. His study is not peer-reviewed, but he uses the same methodology as studies that are peer-reviewed. It is the methodology that's analytically invalid. None of Graney's calculations are wrong. So if the methodology were valid, his study would be accurate. The methodology is not analytically valid, and that the studies that were given peer-reviewed should have failed peer review, in my estimation. But Graney is quite right to point that out. And he's quite right to point out that somebody like Scott Burns has said valuations do affect safe withdrawal rates. Scott has said that I've added a new layer of understanding to the safe withdrawal rate issue. Well, that's good. But Scott has also continued to link to the old school studies after writing those columns. That's an argument that John Graney can legitimately use in his defense. That Scott Burns, even though Scott Burns has pointed out that the studies fail to take into consideration valuations and that valuations affect the result, continues to link to them. And that's a link to these studies is a form of endorsement of them. So, if you're looking to say something in defense of the goons, I think that's a point that can legitimately be made in their defense. Point number five, most investors tolerate the inaccuracies in these studies. This is the killer. The studies, The safe withdrawal rate is a mathematical calculation. So when I discovered the errors in these studies, I knew that there was going to be some abuse of posting. Knowing John as I did, I knew that he would be posting abusively because he had a record of doing so. But I believed that the investors who used the studies would rise up when they saw that the numbers were wrong and would insist that the studies be corrected. That did not happen. There were some who asked that they be corrected. There were a good number who have asked that honest posting be permitted at our boards. But there are some who sat on their hands and said nothing, and there were a large number who actively defended the false claims, the false safe withdrawal rate claims. And that doesn't make it right to fail to correct a study you've done, but it does put the matter in a somewhat different perspective, doesn't it? That many investors like inaccurate studies. They love them. That's not an overstatement. I've had posters say, I think Graney's study is wonderful. These are people planning retirements who are likely going to experience failed retirements because the numbers are wildly off the mark of what you get if you use an analytically valid study. Yet, to this day, they defend the studies. They praise them. That's an amazing reality, but it's a reality all the same. And it's a reality that needs to be known by people trying to understand why it is that we are now living through the greatest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States. It's part of our story. Point number six in defense of the goons. Their ideas are consistent with the efficient market theory. The efficient market theory is the academic theory that is the intellectual framework for the passive investing model of understanding how stock investing works. The old school safe withdrawal rate studies are consistent with the efficient market theory. I say that the efficient market theory is wrong. Theory does not hold up to scrutiny, and I'm certainly not the only person who says that. There are many academic researchers who have come to that same conclusion. But there are also many experts who have failed to warn people that the efficient market theory does not stand up to scrutiny. This is not common knowledge today. It's known among many investing experts, but it's not known in the general public that the intellectual framework for the passive investing model has failed in the real world. And if the efficient market theory held up, the old school safe withdrawal rate studies would hold up. If the market were efficient, these studies would indeed be accurate. And that's a point that could be made in defense of the goons. Repetition of marketing slogans affects us all. One of the things I explored in an earlier podcast is how many of the beliefs we have about investing today are the product of marketing efforts put forward by the Wall Street firms. That these ideas, this you know, complex of ideas, the efficient market theory, passive investing, all this sort of thing, it started in the academic world. It started with academic research. But at some point in the 70s, Wall Street got involved and realized that the approach to investing that they sell to the public had to be changed to reflect this research. And they came up with marketing slogans to help sell it. And these are the phrases we hear all the time, that timing doesn't work, and buy and hold, and stay the course, and stocks for the long run, and all this sort of thing. These phrases have been repeated so many times that they have been drilled into the heads of the goons and of all of us, really. This is why I say we are all suffer from some form of goonishness, some level of goonishness. These slogans have been repeated thousands and thousands of times, and that affects us. That's why, you know, there's a reason why television commercials are repeated so many times, because they don't work. If you only hear them one time or two times or three times, they don't work. It's when you hear them hundreds of times that they become drilled into your consciousness, that you start to think there must be something to them. And there are many people walking around today thinking, I don't know why long-term timing doesn't work, but it must not work, because I have heard that phrase, timing doesn't work, 10,000 times. But of course, even that isn't verbalized. On some level of consciousness, that's the belief that's held. But we're not even aware of how these marketing slogans have influenced us. And I don't think the goons are aware. So to the extent that their behavior is reflecting beliefs that they are not aware of, That's a point that can be made in their defense. It may not justify the behavior, but it does go a way to explaining it. Point number 8, popular opinion affects us all. It's a very human thing. We all want we all act as part of communities. We are not loners. We are not computers with legs who just process information bits. All of us learn by getting together with friends and coworkers and neighbors and fellow community members and talking things over. And when we have talked things over for the past 20 or 30 years, what we've heard mirrored back to us are the passive investing beliefs. And that's affected us. And it affects us again in a way in which we don't even comprehend. It changes our way of perceiving reality when it comes to investing. It changes on a very fundamental level, on a level where it's hard for us even to examine what we believe and why we believe it. And that's true of the goons as well as it is for all the rest of us. Point number 9, they are right to see the rational investing model or the new school safe withdrawal rate research as a threat to their way of thinking. I think what the reason why there have been bans on honest posting at the retire early boards and at the indexing boards is that on many issues, there are not bans on honest posting. People put forward different ideas, and that's accepted. That's viewed as normal. But if the claim that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are analytically valid holds up to scrutiny, and it does, then the old school studies are obviously invalid, but it goes much farther than that. If the old school studies are invalid, if the studies we use to plan our retirements are wrong, then passive investing fails. The entire model we use, it's not just the retirement studies that are wrong. If the passive investing model has been telling us for 30 years how to plan our retirements and it's been telling us bad information, then that whole model collapses to the ground. So the stakes are very high, and the goons understand this in a way that many other community members do not. I believe that John Graney has understood this from the first day, and this is the reason why he fights so viciously. There are many, normal community members who say, why have these battles? Why not just allow both sides? They don't understand that what the goons understand, which is that passive investing and rational investing cannot really coexist. I would like to see us try. I would like to see us try to get along in a friendly way, passive investors and rational investors. But in a long-term sense, both models cannot remain. One is going to be dominant over the other. Today, passive investing is dominant. If we allow honest posting, I do sincerely believe that rational investing will defeat passive investing in the school of public opinion and will eventually become dominant itself. And I think the goons see that. And so they see a threat to their way of thinking about investing, and they're not willing to compromise, or they're not willing to become friendly and warm with those who hold another viewpoint, because they see it as not a small threat, but a very, very big threat. Point number 10 in defense of the goons. They are sincere when they say that today's prices are, quote, impossible. There's a poster, a goon poster at the Goon Central board, Schroeder, who said that to me. I don't know how long. I think it was about 6 months back. And he said, Rob, stocks, I was saying that the red alert danger zone is when stocks are, the PE10 level is higher than 20. He said, Rob, stocks are never going to be below 20 again. It's never going to happen. It's been above 20 since 1995. It's now, 2000 and it was early 2008. We're never going to go below 20 again, Rob. Give it up. Well, we've now dropped to as low as 13. Today we're at 15. So we have gone below 20. But I believe that Schroeder quite sincerely believed that we would never again go below 20. He was wrong, but he was sincere. And that doesn't tolerate the behavior we've seen from him, but it does go a ways to explaining it. It is a point in defense of the goons. It is hard for the human mind to wrap itself around the reality that stocks can be priced at insanely dangerous levels for 13 years. And then, only then, return to reasonable valuation levels where we are today. It's a hard concept to get your mind around. When something stays the same way for 13 years, we tend to think it's real, that there's some substance there. It's not just cotton candy. You know, it's as if we went 13 years without a snowfall. And we would all start to believe, well, the climate has changed permanently. There's just not going to be snow anymore. And then the 14th year, we get a huge snowstorm. It would blow people's minds because they started to think that there was a new reality. Well, when we went to those insane price levels that we experienced from 1995 to the first part of 2008, many of us came to think that reality had changed permanently, that never again would prices be reasonable. Those, you know, we were wrong to think that, but many of us were sincere in thinking just that. Point number 11, we really are hardwired to approach investing from an emotional perspective rather than a rational perspective. That's a point Michael Kitsis made that I thought was a very strong point. I believe we are hardwired. Now, the question is what conclusion you draw from that. What some seem to draw from that, what some financial planners seem to draw is because humans are hardwired to approach investing emotionally, that the investing advice should be rooted in emotion. In other words, in order to sell, your investing advice has to have appeal, and in order to have appeal, it has to be rooted in emotion. I take it just the opposite way. My view is that in order to work, investors need to make rational decisions, not emotional decisions. And given that we are hardwired to react emotionally to stocks, what we need are investing experts who are always trying to discourage the emotional take. This is why I believe that passive investing needs to be rejected outright. Because if you even go so far as to say that passive investing is okay, you know, is sort of okay, it's okay, of course, for people who want to use it. I am not dogmatic about people not using it. But I don't like to encourage it in any way, shape, or form, because passive investing plays to the human emotions. It's rooted in emotion. The very idea that it's not necessary to change your stock allocation when prices go to insane levels, and that is passive investing, is an emotional concept, not an intellectual concept. And I believe that once you allow emotion to get a hold of you in the way that it gets a hold of you when you become a passive investor, when you sign up and you say, starting today, I will not change my stock allocation no matter how much prices change, that emotion eats away at your self-confidence and at your ability to reason. And so my conclusion from the fact that we are hardwired to investing emotionally is that we need to fight that emotion with a model that is rooted in human reason, the rational investing model. But I do agree that we approach investing emotionally, and that is a point that helps explain the goon behavior we've seen over the last 6 years. Point number 12, the scientific approach to investing is something new. A big theme going on in the background in all our discussions is that what we call passive investing, this model, is a quote-unquote scientific model. Passive investing, of course, is not scientific at all. It's anti-science. But it has the trappings of science, and it was intended to be scientific. All of these ideas are rooted in this academic research from the 1960s, the research that came up with the efficient market theory, and that was something new. It was a rational approach. It was intended to be a rational approach to investing. It became irrational when the research showed that it doesn't stand up to scrutiny and it wasn't corrected. At that point, it became irrational. It became anti-science, but it is rooted in science. And many people want to believe that it really is scientific. And we don't have a history of science in the investing field. So this is something new. And I think there are many people who like the idea of scientific investing theories. And to find that a scientific theory became dominant, but that it was all rooted in nonsense, that it was all wrong, is a harsh blow to people who have that belief. And so I think that's a point in defense of the goons. I think the goons tend to be the people who have the strongest belief that investing analysis should be scientific, and they have been let down by the failures of the first scientific approach. You know, my belief is part of science is correcting your mistakes as you discover them. So I don't have a problem with the fact that the first scientific approach failed. I just view it as you tried to get an airplane up in the air, it crashed. Now you make some adjustments. Now you change whatever it is you have to change to make the thing actually fly. And rational investing is rooted in many of the ideas that drive passive investing. It just corrects the things that we have learned that are wrong about passive investing so that the plane will actually fly. But to people who got very excited about the idea of seeing that plane take off, it comes as a hard hit to see that the first scientific investing approach has indeed failed. Point 13, in defense of the goons. There is real good to the passive investing model. There are good things, and I talk about the good work that John Bogle has done over his career, and I won't go into it all here, but you know, the focus on cost containment, the idea of long-term investing, avoiding the short-term noise, the stay the course concept is a wonderful concept. He doesn't implement it properly, but it's a wonderful idea. All of that makes people feel a real kinship both with Bogle and with other passive investors. And they have strong emotional ties to this model. And giving up that model is hard. And it seeing, you know, one of the things that I do that I think gets the goons so angry is I don't just say that this model has failed. I present evidence. I present numbers that show that it failed. And they, you know, it's hard to argue with a number. If it were just Rob Bennett saying, oh, I don't think passive investing is such a hot idea, I think they could tolerate it. They could say, well, you know, Rob, you're a nut, but what are you going to do? You know, there are nuts in the world. But I don't do that. I you know, I point to the historical data. I show that it's wrong. I prove it with numbers. And I think that causes the nuclear explosion that we see on our boards whenever honest posting on the failings of the old school studies is permitted. So again, that doesn't justify the behavior we've seen. It does go a ways to explaining it, I believe. Point number 14, the bull market lasted a long time. The bull market isn't something that lasted, you know. Passive investing is irrational investing. It's emotional investing. Does it ever work? Sure, it works. It works when the market is irrational. The market was intensely irrational in the 1990s. The prices were insane. And passive investing was the toast of the town. Well, that bull market lasted 18 years. So a lot of people experienced that. And a lot of people, when something works for 18 years, they come to believe it works, period. They now need to change that way of thought, and that takes time. But the bull market lasted a long time. Point number 15, economic change goes with stock market changes. One of the things that's happening now is we've seen the what I call the passive investing stock crash of 2008. You would think that would at last cause people to abandon their belief in passive investing or their belief in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. To some extent, that's happened. But no, people have not given it up. And what people are doing who don't, you know, emotionally don't want to give it up is they are turning to other explanations. And they're saying, oh, the economy is so strange today. That's what's going on. There's nothing wrong with passive investing. It's just the economy is so strange. The economy's broken. Not our investing model. That's what Bill Bengen said in an email that he recently sent me. You know, he's told his clients to get out of stocks. And I said, isn't that short-term timing? Isn't that against everything you believe in? He said, no. He says the economy is so messed up. He says, I can't advise people to invest in stocks in this environment. Well, he's abandoning the investing philosophy that he's believed in. He's justifying it on grounds that the economy has changed. I don't think the economy has changed at all. The economy, it's those overvalued stocks that caused the economy to get into trouble. It's the wild overvaluation that we experienced in the 90s that's causing the economic crisis that we're living through today. But if you believe strongly enough in this old passive investing model, you may have a hard time taking that in. And seeing the economic change gives you a rationalization for avoiding the reality that you don't want to face. Point number 16, you can't go halfway. Logic takes you either to accept passive investing or to accept rational investing all the way. It's very hard to compromise between these two models because the differences are not fine points. The differences are fundamental. The question of whether valuations needs to be considered when assessing how stocks are likely to perform in the future, that's a fundamental point. It goes right to the root of the investing project. If you think valuations matter, passive investing is nonsense because passive investing says you don't need to change your allocation in response to changes in valuations. If you think valuations matter, don't matter, then you should engage in passive investing. Because if valuations don't matter, you really can't time the market. If valuations really have no effect, passive investing makes sense. The old school studies make sense. Point number 17, buy and hold has a lock-in effect. This is a killer. Buy and hold, I love buy and hold, but only if it's implemented properly. I believe in a form of buy and hold in which you try to hold to the same risk level, which means you have to adjust your stock allocation in response to dramatic price changes. But buy and hold is a lock-in strategy. It's sort of a strategy where you have to put blinders on and stick with that strategy through thick and thin. You can't be changing it or it won't work. And so the passive investors are in a bind. Their minds are telling them this model has failed. They're looking at the research. You know, there's now research going back 20, 30 years showing that the efficient market theory does not stand up to scrutiny. The passive investing model has failed. It has failed in its first real world test. But they took a vow to never abandon this strategy back when they bought into the buy and hold concept. Buy and hold has a lock-in effect. That's the most dangerous thing about it. Buy and hold is wonderful, but you better be darn sure you understand what you're doing before you become a buy and hold investor, because if you get it wrong, buy and hold is the worst of all possible strategies. Those who didn't buy into buy and hold are in a far better position today, because when the market started to go down, they felt free to bail out and they didn't suffer a huge crash. But the true buy and holders, they're tied to the mast. They're going to go down with the ship. And that causes, that reality that they're aware of on some level of consciousness causes emotional reactions to people, especially people like me, pointing out the flaws, pointing out what the historical data says, which just shows them, it almost rubs their noses in the fact that they bought into a failed strategy. And of course, it's not my intent to hurt their feelings or to rub their noses in anything, but it's just a fact that the historical data is hard medicine. It's hard medicine. Point number 18. The idea that timing works sounds too good to be true. All of the rational investing model is rooted in the idea that long-term timing works. I don't believe short-term timing works. I do believe that long-term timing works. That's changing your stock allocation with the understanding that you may not see a good result for doing so for as long as 10 years. If long-term timing works, stock investing is far more attractive than hardly anyone has realized in the past. Stocks are not nearly as risky as they have been painted to be. I think that's great news. I think we should all be celebrating. I think we've discovered something wonderful here in our in the retire early community, the indexing community. But the people who bought into the passive investing model have a hard time accepting that. It's like hearing that there really is a heaven. You're going to die and you're going to come back to life and you're going to live forever. It's almost too good. It's news that is too good to let in. That's a big problem. That's a big problem with the goons, I believe. I believe it's something that really drives them, that they just, they can't let in the good news. It's just too much. It's too good. It's too good. What we have learned is too good. Point number 19 in defense of the goons. Humans accept change only slowly. As I mentioned, the big price drop has shaken up a lot of the goons. You can see this. But it's only been, 3 months, 4 months, whatever it's been. It's going to take a while for these new ideas to really infiltrate the goon mindset before they can really accept that it really is so, that the good news is true. Point number 20. This is a point in defense of the goons. I mentioned earlier, there has been a change in goon behavior lately. I commented in a recent podcast that at bogleheads.org, that board is owned by the most dogmatic passive investors alive. And the board still has a ban on honest posting in effect, but they've loosened that ban considerably. I've seen some threads over there lately where people openly defy passive investing dogmas and are not removed, and do not have smear campaigns directed at them. So, if we're going to tell the full story, we have to point out that the goons have not acknowledged getting it wrong. The goons have not reversed the bans on honest posting, but the goons have mellowed. The goons have mellowed as a result of the passive investing stock crash of 2008. Point number 21. The goons were successful for a long time. A lot of the people who today are goons, they were investing throughout the 1980s in stocks and throughout the 1990s, and they had many years of very good results. And every year in which they had good results just confirmed to them that their investing approach was the right one. So, they have a long history telling them that passive investing works. It's hard for them to give it up. Point number 22, and this is the last point. The stock investing is, I make this point often. Stock investing is, in order to understand how stock investing works, you need to understand two very, very different things. Stock investing is half the result of economic realities, which are hard things, things that can be numerically calculated, and they are half the result of human emotion, which are ephemeral sorts of things, emotions. How do you quantify emotions? The people who are good at numbers often don't even like to talk about emotions. It makes them queasy, makes their tummies hurt. And that's what we're dealing with the goons. The goons are the ones who thrive in discussions of numbers. They feel confident. Maybe they don't feel so confident in social interactions, but turn the discussion to investing and they bring out the charts and the tables and the calculators and they're king of the hill. They've got it all figured out. But they don't, because investing is 70% emotion and only 30% numerical calculations. But they have a hard time. They have a hard time acknowledging that. They have a hard time letting that in. That's always going to be true. Those who are good with numbers, as a rule, are always going to struggle with emotions. And of course, the other side is true. Those of us who are good with emotions are always going to struggle with numbers. I'm the last guy you want to turn to for a numbers-based analysis. If I didn't have John Walter Russell doing the numbers for those calculators, I couldn't do them. There's no way, no how. Conceptually, I always wanted to do them. I knew there were calculators that could be done that would have value, but I can't do them. I don't, I wouldn't trust them if I put them out without John's input. So that's to learn how investing really works, we need to have communities of people from all perspectives working together. That's the magic of community. That's why I record a podcast like this. My long-term goal, my vision of the future of investing is discussion board communities like what the Retire Early community used to be, like what the indexing community used to be, but with the difference that people from all perspectives are welcome. So, you know, the numbers oriented shall lie down with the emotions oriented, because it's only when both factors are considered that you get the full picture. It's only when both factors are considered that you can calculate the numbers accurately. It's only when both factors are considered that you can learn the true safe withdrawal rate. The goon phenomenon is a response to the many community members in all of these discussion board communities that understood the emotional realities to a greater extent than the numbers people did. And it was a response by the numbers people of defensiveness and rage at having their errors discovered. And that's a wound that we need to heal. And I don't think we heal it by ignoring it. I've had many people tell me to ignore it. Oh, Rob, you know, you're so mean to point out that the safe withdrawal rate studies are wrong. Rob, you are so mean. How could you do that? I think we have to point out that the numbers are wrong, because otherwise we're not serious people. There are people using these studies to plan retirements, and they have a right to accurate numbers. So we must do that. But we must temper our insistence on correct numbers with an understanding of the factors that drive the goons to do what they do. We don't want to make the mistake the goons did and give in to our lowest, most negative human emotions and become filled with anger and hate and rage. We need the goons contributing in our communities, but we need them contributing constructively. And of course, they need the same thing. They need to rise out of the pit that they have fallen into, and they need to become better contributors than they have been in the past. Goonishness, sin, helps no one. Doesn't help the rational investors, doesn't help the passive investors, doesn't help the communities in which these people participate. So we do need to overcome goonishness. That's job number one. But to overcome it, we need to do more than just condemn it. We need to understand it. Good luck with your investing strategies.